Well, welcome to the Pro-Life Team podcast. I'm Jacob. I'm here with Bryce. And today we're going to be talking about things that Bryce thinks are helpful to those in maybe rural communities or just in general. So I'm excited to hear what you'd like to talk about, Bryce. Would you introduce yourself and then we'll dive in to the topics that you're looking to go into?
Sure. Yes, I appreciate how vague that was, Jacob. It gives me a lot of room to decide on the fly what we're going to talk about here. As you said, my name is Bryce Asberg. I'm the executive director at Helping Hands Pregnancy Resource Center in Hillsdale, Michigan. I've been doing that, well, we're coming up on 4 years here now. Been involved with pro-life work in a variety of capacities before then. Let's see. So I live in Hillsdale, Michigan. I attended Hillsdale College, which is in Hillsdale, Michigan. Although originally I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, in Tacoma, Washington, and came here for college. My wife's originally from Charlotte, North Carolina. We got married right before my senior year, right after she graduated, and we have lived here since. So we have one son, Malachi, and another little one on the way this fall. Let's see, in addition to my work at Helping Hands, I volunteer with a campus ministry at Hillsdale College. I am getting my master's in bioethics from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicago, and I enjoy smoking meat. So that's one of the rules, I think, if you start smoking meat, it has to become part of your personality. So I grudgingly accept that.
Yeah, and one of the things I've heard you say is that perhaps it was world domination or great influence is through smoked meat.
That's true.
That might be a good story to share. Share how smoked meat has become a part of your ability to reach people in your community.
Yeah, most people don't realize that most power accumulated in the world has some connection with smoked meat. And so it's a very important tool to have in your arsenal, which I say jokingly, but it is actually smoked meat is a wonderful hobby, because it is a very useful hobby, relatively cheap compared to a lot of hobbies, and you have the ability to serve. So I've actually catered several weddings. And every year I cater multiple events for pregnancy centers, volunteers and staff. And, in that way, it's a blessing. And then actually in some of our partnerships, so I will cater for our county, drug court graduation. And we work with them to get referrals and to serve some men and women from the courts. And that actually has opened up a huge door just to really cement that relationship. And we were actually just talking about it today. I will be smoking again in July. Smoke meat, not meth. That's one of the slogans of our county drug court. And so I'm grateful to get to help with that.
Interesting. So, yeah, tell us about the judge and the relationship and the men that you're connecting, that are getting connected with your ministry.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to actually beg off on that in a sense, Jacob, not that I'm afraid of that question. We'll come back around to it. But I guess first I just want to talk about our community. And so we serve a community that's about 40,000 people. That's our whole county, not our town, but our county. And for many of your listeners, I'm sure if they're in the pregnancy center world, they're familiar with that kind of context, even if it's not theirs. And so it's a very, and you know, every county around us has at least one pregnancy center also. And so that's our target audience, right? That's who we're serving, is those 40,000 people, 7,000 women of childbearing age, 700 pregnancies, 500 live births a year, give or take, right? That's it. That's who we're serving. And that kind of puts a cap then in a sense on how many clients we're actually going to be able to see, because there's only so many clients and there's only so many pregnancies in our community. And so that's been something that we've had to think a lot about as we think about growth, as we think about planning and wanting to serve with excellence, absolutely. But also recognizing that just because of the context of where we serve, it's going to be different. And I think coming to this point of realization, that's really important. Yeah. That it's not worse, right? It's very important. But it is different. And so to compare yourself to a center in a large urban area is not, can be discouraging sometimes if you have the wrong perspective going into it. And so that's something that, you know, I've started talking about over the last couple of years and just had the opportunity to share with some brothers and sisters at the Heartbeat Conference around the same idea. What does it look like to pursue excellence in a rural pregnancy center? And so if you don't mind, I'd rather talk about that first and then circle back around to this core partnership as an example.
Yeah, I would prefer that. And I love how you turn the size of your county into an advantage instead of comparing it to a larger county and feeling like you have to use the same, you know, because you have to use different tools and you can use different tools and based on the size of your community and number of live births. So yes, please. Yeah. Share how you,
good.
You know, so, what metrics you look at and the advantages of being in that smaller space. Sure.
Well, and you know, I've had the opportunity a couple times to present some of this content as a breakout session. And what I absolutely love about it is the chance to make it interactive. And we, you know, it tends to attract people who are interested in this when they see the title. Usually that's their context. And so to turn the question around on them has been so enjoyable to hear. What are some of the advantages and what are some of the disadvantages, the strengths and the weaknesses that come with serving in a smaller community or in a rural area? And it's been really rewarding to get to start and facilitate that conversation because, you know, I'm coming into it, like I said, less than 4 years, and I certainly don't have all the answers here. But I think it's a really important question, a really important conversation to frame up. So unfortunately, we don't have a live studio audience here to chime in their wisdom. So I'll give some tidbits from my mind and from the collective hive mind I've got to learn at some of these conferences. But, you know, the first thing I would say is we need to frame the issue and we need to step back and we need to say, okay, what are some of the strengths and weaknesses? What is the situation that you find yourself in? And I think given human nature, it's really easy to just start with, here are the disadvantages, right? Here are the things that are working against me. Maybe there aren't medical providers. Maybe it's really hard to find a medical director for your center. Maybe it feels like there's just not enough money to go around. There aren't big businesses that are Christian owned that are excited to support your work. You can go down the list, right? Personnel, funding. There aren't many abortion minded clients and, you know, all of these things. And the list keeps going. But then to actually flip it and say, well, what are some of the things we do have going for us? And that is a wonderful thing because we do have advantages that are going for us in this world, in this work, excuse me. We do have advantages. And so what are those? And one is just the fact that you can actually reach everyone in your community, right? You actually have the ability for everyone in your service area to know who you are before they find themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. And that's a huge advantage, right? That's something that's just not attainable for centers in some of these bigger areas. You know, and then there's lots of opportunities for creative partnerships that often are closed also. And so this hits on the court that we'll talk about a little bit. But, you know, in many of our communities, we may be the only resource for diapers or baby clothes or baby items. And so sometimes people have no choice but to work with us, even if we wouldn't normally think of them as totally mission aligned partners. There's still a great chance for collaboration because they need us, right? Because in a sense, sometimes in these small communities, we're all family. And maybe, yeah, we are like the weird religious uncle that you're always a little nervous what he's going to say around Thanksgiving dinner table, right? But still family. So you get an invite and you have a seat at the table. And that is a real strength of being able to serve in a rural area. You with me, Jacob? Good. Did I lose you yet?
Yeah, I was talking with someone the other day. Yeah, the internet's a little wonky, but the recording will piece together in the end. So it might be a little bit of a lag between responses. But I was talking with someone the other day, and they were in a county of 10,000 people, and I think they measured 138 live births in 2023. And I referred them to you because I was trying to share and recycle some of the ideas that you have shared that I have heard you talk about, which is to help every pregnancy, help every woman facing a pregnancy. Can you tell us what you, some of the things that you've done to connect with every pregnancy in your county, or what are some of your visions, at least for that space?
Absolutely. And so, like I said, really the goal has to be, how is everyone in our community going to know who we are, right? How is everyone out there going to know the work that we're doing? What are those community events that, you know, the county fair and the things that maybe there's still a couple things in your area that everyone goes to? And those will be great opportunities to get your face in front of everyone and your name and the services that you provide. But the other thing, which I think you might be alluding to, is we started a program in partnership with our hospital here, so that every baby that's born at our hospital from our county is getting a box from the pregnancy center. And that layette box, that box includes diapers, onesie, hat, gloves, socks, blanket, breast pads, a handwritten note to the new mom, information on our parenting services, and a coupon that they can redeem for a family Bible at the pregnancy center. And that has been just a huge opportunity to, one, build a really important relationship, of course, with the hospital. Partnering is critical, but then to celebrate every life that's born in our community is a worthwhile thing. But then we're making sure, most importantly, that every new family in our area knows who we are, right? They know the resources that are out there, and they know that we're here to help them. And that has been just a beautiful thing. And so we give out about 300 boxes a year then through our county hospital, which is a lot. And it's probably, my estimate's probably about $13,000 worth of material a year that we give out just through those boxes. But it's been very successful in spreading the word, in building bridges. And like I said, just making sure that every new family out there knows that they're not alone, knows that we're here to help and how we can help.
Oh, that's so good. So one of the things that I've learned over the last 15 years, well, maybe more than 15 years, is the power of word of mouth. And
yes, absolutely.
Back in 2011, I first saw word of mouth get passed by Google, but that was in a Northern Californian city. But in communities that are 50,000 people or less, word of mouth has stayed number one.
Yeah.
And so totally. When you said county fair, community events, and also these boxes that you're giving to women who've had a live birth at the hospital with a hospital partnership, all of those things are encouraging and empowering and equipping people to provide word of mouth referrals when they know of someone else who needs help and care. And so I would like to encourage those who are listening, if you're in a bigger city, word of mouth by a friend or professional is number two on how someone heard about you typically. And if you're in a community 50,000 or less, word of mouth is number one, with internet, Google, eventually AI, as being number two. And
sure.
All that to say is, if by going to the county fair and interacting with people, you're equipping people to do word of mouth referrals, and will see an impact on word of mouth going up when you do county fairs, community events, and interact with people in your community.
Yeah. And that's certainly especially true for parenting services, right? And so we invest heavily into online ad spend for abortion related search terms too, because that's critical, right? That's so important to what we're doing. But you're right that word of mouth drives a lot of it. And I was actually helped by a marketing professional that, met with me to give some free advice. And he's worked for lots of national scale campaigns. And one of the things he helped me to recognize is that when you're running on word of mouth like that, there's not as much of a difference between our donor market and our client market as we might think. Because even when we're doing what we might think of as supporter or donor outreach, right, we are prepping people to make that word of mouth referral. Have it being really strong in the supporter communication category and making sure they know how we're talking about things and the work that we're doing and the resources that are available. That is exactly like you talked about at the county fair. That's equipping people to refer clients to you. And so that's a huge thing as well that was helpful for me to recognize that, okay, maybe in the word of mouth context, these audiences that I thought of as separate actually have more of an interrelationship than I would have expected otherwise.
So, yeah, that's good. So going back to the judge and the smoked meats.
Yeah, sure.
So tell us about, you know, when you were able to have, you know, interact and build a relationship with that judge, and what did that look like?
Yeah, sure. So this is one of those things where it, at first glance, it often seems like a negative, but there are opportunities that are included in it. And so what I mean by that is that for many of our rural communities, something that comes up a lot is there aren't resources for this. There aren't resources for that, right? There's no one who's doing this work. And certainly there are downsides to that. But like I said, it can create an opportunity for us to come in and serve where otherwise maybe we wouldn't have a seat at the table. And so parenting mentoring is one of those things we've seen where we've partnered with our county court system and are, you know, the free resource for parenting education and support in Hillsdale County. And that's been a long process because sometimes the wheels of government move slowly. But really over the last 3 years, we've been working to cultivate this where we are able to bless our county in that way by providing a service that they need. Like they really do need to be able to refer people for parenting education and support. But we're doing that then at no charge to the county as well. We're blessing the clients that we serve because they earn incentives through our store that otherwise they wouldn't earn otherwise other places. And then we're also advancing the mission of our center, spreading that word of mouth, making connections with all kinds of people that otherwise we would not have had the chance to. And so that has just been a huge success for us. And when I say huge success, I don't hear me say immediate success because there certainly were months of disappointment there. But, you know, like I said, I think there's real opportunities to cultivate these relationships. Sometimes pro-life people or Christians, I think, feel like everyone is against us. And we get into some of these rooms and think that, you know, everyone has it out for us, maybe. And my experience, and granted, I understand that my community is, you know, more conservative than the average in the country. But my experience has been that most people don't have it out for us. And I think that's true even in more urban areas. Now, in some places, there are maybe activists or people who are really upset about the work that we're doing and know how to be loud and sometimes get us kicked out of rooms that otherwise we would be in. But it's helpful to realize that most of the time, most people don't have an axe to grind against the work that we're doing. And so while, yes, sometimes people are loud and can cause a little bit of a stir to close some doors for us, we also then have opportunities where if we say most people don't care, right? Most people don't have an agenda against us. So let's come in and let's see if the doors are open. And just to encourage that attitude to say, let's knock on these doors and see if the Lord will open them, right? What possibilities for partnership might there be here that we would have missed, that we wouldn't have thought of otherwise? And so, in this context, we just through a mutual connection, we're able to sit down with the judges and share about the evidence-based parenting resources we use. We partner with Bright Course, as I know many centers do as well. And they were really, really happy to see that, really impressed to hear about the program, to recognize what a benefit we would be able to bring to their clients. And so that started that. And then really, you know, just of course, lots of paperwork and back-end stuff and how are we going to handle these situations? And, you know, we're still learning things all the time, of course, but that really started that fruitful partnership. And then it's one of those things that if you're doing your work with excellence, then opportunities yield opportunities. And so some of these people who at first said, okay, yeah, we'll partner with you and see where this goes. Some of them have become some of our biggest advocates, right? Some of our biggest cheerleaders, who really, you know, even will go to bat for us and say, no, this is a really important work in the community, or this is a really valuable class we need to refer people to. And so I guess, you know, the encouragement there is there are doors that are open everywhere, but especially in small communities, right? There's going to be a higher percentage of doors that are open for you. Fewer doors overall, maybe, but a higher percent of them will be open. And so just start knocking and see what the Lord will do. And there's lots of need out there. And just because those partnerships haven't happened yet doesn't mean that they're not open to it, right? Most people are just overwhelmed. You know, I think in my community, like you think of a group like DHHS that works with foster care. There's an extreme shortage of foster care homes in Hillsdale County. There's an unfortunately high instance of child abuse or neglect. And so these people are just overwhelmed, right? They don't have time to go out and figure out what classes are out there or what resources are there. And so if we can do their work, if we can look them up and I'm sorry, if we can do that work for them, right? If we can look them up and share our lesson list and introduce ourselves and, you know, just say, hey, if this is ever something that would be a benefit to anyone you work with, here you go, you know, and just start knocking on those doors. And that includes case managers at the county court system, you know, whoever it is that works with foster care or child abuse or neglect cases or other nonprofits that intersect in those areas. Again, where there's a lack of resources, there could be a great opportunity for us to come in and help meet the need. And I think you'll be surprised to find doors opened that you assumed would be closed.
Yeah, that, and I'd like to have you share a little bit about your desire for encouraging people at the college in your, well, in your neighborhood, and trying to maybe mentor or, you know, encourage them to consider pro-life work. Talk about that concept.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's another concept. That's a different thing. Can we come back to rural centers after? This can just be a little parenthesis because I've got
sure.
more. Okay, good.
Well, whichever, wherever you want to go is fine.
No, we'll do a parenthesis here.
Okay.
This is what should we call this? This idea is an embryonic stage, okay? So we're working with like a 8-week embryo here, not a fully developed infant or teenager. This is a weird analogy. I'm going to stop. But so I've shared with you a little bit, Jacob, just that there happened to be quite a few pro-life young people at the college in my community. I recognize that's abnormal and not the standard case everywhere. But I've talked with multiple who say, yeah, I'm interested in going to do pro-life work. But almost never have I heard someone say, yeah, I'm interested in going to work for a pregnancy center. And that makes me sad because pregnancy centers do great work. And I thought, what is going on here? And I think part of it might be that pregnancy centers tend to be, you know, a lot of us are smaller organizations. Certainly my pregnancy center would be included in that list. We don't have a lot of energy dedicated toward talent recruitment. We don't usually have like a unified big brand. And so people tend to think of, you know, all these pregnancy centers across the country as just separate organizations. And there's no one who's doing recruiting for all of us. So I don't have a great answer for that problem. But one of the things we've started trying to do here is developing an internship program at the pregnancy center. And so the idea there is, can we bring on interns in 10, 20 hours a week and give them an opportunity, sure, to do tasks like folding baby clothes and sweeping floors and rearranging things. Those are the tasks I've had my interns doing so far. But also to do some, you know, some thoughtful readings. Are there articles and books that communicate the work that we're doing here and the significance of it? To put them through training like they were going to be a client advocate. And then to really be thoughtful in our conversation with them, that they would gain an understanding of the pregnancy center movement, of the work that we're doing, of the great opportunities to serve and do the Lord's work here. And then wherever they go afterwards, they would have an understanding of this movement. And maybe they would be interested in volunteering or even working for, but maybe they just end up as a faithful member of a church and are a voice to say, hey, we really need to be engaged with the pregnancy center, right? We really need to be thoughtful and intentional about this partnership. And that's a huge value add for the movement. So I'm sure others have done this and have great resources. So if you have an internship program and want to tell me how to do it better, please let me know. We just started with our two interns last week and are muddling our way through it. But that's the aim, is to cast a vision for what it could look like to be meaningfully involved in your community through pregnancy center ministry. And I really believe that will serve them wherever they go and whatever they end up doing too. So yeah, more, I don't know, maybe we'll talk more about that later when I have a little better handle on what that could look like fruitfully. Well, right now it's a trial and error, and my poor interns are dealing with the error side of it.
I just love the, I wanted to bring it up at least for the seed planting concept of encouraging others to, you know, to explore, try, and to be encouraged to look at that concept, that idea of fostering a desire and passion and connection with those future leaders, so that they will hopefully be weaved in to this pregnancy clinic portion of the pro-life work.
I think that's one of the most important things our movement can be doing. Is it, so say we take a 50-year perspective, what's the best thing you could do to strengthen the movement 50 years from now? I have a hard time coming up with something more pressing than developing a talent pipeline. I really think that's critical. So finding the people who already have the heart and helping them understand how to channel that is huge.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's go back to your additional topics you might want to touch on.
So the rural center thing, which of course we've already been talking about a bit, but you know, I just want to underscore, like, where did this come from? It's very much a personal project in the sense that, you know, all of these questions were in my head of what am I supposed to do here, right? Where so many of the wonderful models of pregnancy care are hard to translate to a rural context where, okay, that's great if you have an HR person, or if you can afford to hire an RN, or if you, you know, you can do any of these things that just felt so out of reach for us, you know, especially when I started and we were coming in on not the most stable footing in every way. So what does that look like? And so that's really where it started. And I think if I were to sum it up, the challenge I have is to say, okay, first we need to look around at our situation and to accurately identify where we are, right? What is our community? And then start from there, like, who are we serving? How many people are in our area? And I think to be really realistic about that and say, okay, we're probably never going to serve 100 abortion-minded women in a year because there aren't 100 abortions in our county. And that's not something to complain about, right? That's something to thank the Lord for. But be realistic about that, right? What is our area we're serving? Who are we serving? And then from there, what are the services we need to serve them effectively? Excuse me. So be realistic. But with that, I say, there's no complaining allowed. And this is really important because, excuse me, it's really important to say that we can't complain. We look around and we accept our constraints. We say, yes, this is where we are, and I accept it. And why do we accept it? Because we believe that God has placed us here. And this is so important. You know, in Acts 17, Paul tells us that God has ordained the times and places where all the nations would be. He knew what he was doing when he placed us in rural context, right? He knew exactly what he was doing when he planted your pregnancy center in a small town or in a rural, not very populated area. God knows, and he didn't make a mistake either. And so to look around and say, yep, this is where I am. Here are all the things I have going against me. I don't have any Christian lawyers. I don't know who's going to be my medical director, so on and so forth, right? Okay, I get it. But accept those constraints and say, okay, now how do I serve my community with excellence? And so be totally realistic, no interest at all in sugarcoating it, right? But then accept those constraints and say, what does God have for me here? Because he has something, because he knows what he is doing. And we cannot afford to slack off and say, our clients deserve anything less than excellence. Of course, that is unacceptable. Our clients deserve excellence, and we need to serve them better than they're used to being served. Sometimes feels like maybe the bar is a little lower in rural areas, where there's not a ton of resources to go around, but we need to pass that bar, right? We need to treat our clients better than they're treated at any doctor's office in town. You know, the whole experience from start to finish needs to be superior because it needs to be excellent. And this all traces back to this idea that God knows what he's doing, and God has placed us in our community. And it's actually dishonoring to God to look at a center in a bigger area or another town with any amount of jealousy or wishful thinking, right? That if we start to compare ourselves in an unhealthy way, we're questioning God's wisdom, right? We are dishonoring his plan there because he knew what he was doing. And more than that, he cares about our communities. And that's the thing is like, yeah, there's other centers that are reaching more abortion-minded women because there's more abortion-minded women in their community. And certainly I don't want any of this to be an excuse to slack off or to not meet a need that's there. But God knew what he was doing, and he placed us in our communities because he cares about them. Right? He cares about the women and men. And it's not our job to say, I wish that there were 20 times as many of them or whatever it might be, because our job is to love our neighbors. That's what we're called to do, isn't it? Our job is to go out and to serve and to meet those needs and to stand for the defenseless and to strengthen families in our backyard, because nobody else is going to do it. And so that's the thing that's so encouraging to recognize, like, maybe it's really expensive to invest in online advertising. Like, your cost per lead is terrible because there aren't very many leads or whatever it might be. But there is nobody else who is going to bat for those families. There is nobody else who's seeking to protect and to serve that little life that's in danger of abortion. There is nobody else. And that's what's so special, is you get to be the one to stand up for those neighbors, because nobody else in the world is trying to save that life, is trying to stand in and support that family. There's nobody else who's doing it. But that's the great privilege that we have, that God gives us to do, is to serve our neighbors, to love them, to be there for them. And so do you see then how dishonoring it would be to say, oh, I wish that I was in this context instead, or I wish that I was serving those people over here, or that pregnancy center even has an on staff, whatever it might be. But God knew what he was doing, and he placed us where he placed us that we would serve, that we would honor him, that we would represent him well to the neighbors, not over there, not in that county or that big town or that city over there, but in our backyard. And that's the work that he's given us to do. And he's placed us here for this purpose. And so to really flip it on its head then and recognize we have the great privilege of serving our neighbors, and there's no one else who's doing that. And if we're doing our job right, there's no one who would be better at it either, right? That we would be the experts at serving our community, at serving our county, at recognizing realistically the strengths and weaknesses, the things we don't have going for us, whatever, but then to play to our strengths. And so that's really what it boils down to accept our constraints because we know that God is in it, and then to play to our strengths because he calls us to love our neighbors and to serve them with excellence.
Wow, that's so good. Yeah, it's taking, you know, reducing the focus on quantity and bringing the focus into qualitative metrics like percents, you know, having, you know, coverage for the area. And because it's obtainable and it's reachable. So I want to give you a multiple choice option of where to go next. Do you want to talk about your boldness and fundraising, or do you want to talk about church connections or somewhere else? Where do you want to go next?
I don't even know what my boldness and fundraising is, Jacob. So that sounds kind of scary to go that way.
Well, you were telling me about your first year and how you worked on paying off the loan for your center as a group. That was pretty bold, I thought, and pretty amazing. And
sometimes, here's what I'll say on that. Sometimes the best fundraising strategy is follow the Lord and get out of the way. And that's what we did there, was God made it clear a direction that he wanted us to go that wasn't initially on our radar, and was more ambitious than maybe would have been sensible. But it was pretty clear that he was leading. And so we followed, and I got out of the way, and he blessed it. So that's there's more that could be said there, but that's really the thrust of it is get out of the way. Sometimes that's the fundraising strategy that's needed, to trust the Lord and not get in the way.
That's good. Yeah.
Well, this is a very wide ranging conversation, Jacob. This is going to be,
it is. Well,
I don't know what you're going to call it.
Well, really, I love the fact that you're bringing in, so much, fresh insight into the concept of serving in a rural community. And I feel like that's a very common question that people deal with, is how do we serve in a rural community when all of these examples are typically built off of these bigger cities? and trying to navigate the, you know, the examples or the solutions of big city solutions when living and serving in a rural community.
Sure. And, you know, I certainly don't blame anyone for that, right? Big centers are where the client traffic is, and it's a good thing to focus on, especially if we're going to be building a culture of life. But there are a lot of rural centers, and that's why, you know, I think the most important thing to contribute to that conversation is to start the conversation and then to frame it around this idea of accepting your constraints because you trust God's plan and playing to your strengths because you love your neighbors. And sometimes, you know, I think this is an important thing also to recognize that it's really easy to talk about love in abstract terms. Like, I just have so much love for humanity. It's a lot harder to actually love your neighbor, you know, and to love the person who walks through your doors. And I have very little interest in abstract notions of love. You know, people who say, I wish that this was a more loving place or a more whatever. If there's not that actual track record of down and dirty, you know, being with people in their affliction. And so, you know, I think that's really what it boils down to is it's that real love. You know, James talks about not just writing checks for orphans and widows, but visiting orphans and widows in their affliction. And that's such a beautiful calling. And it's a great opportunity for all of our centers, including those of us in rural areas, to actually focus on loving the people that God brought through our doors. And it's hard. You know, one other thing I want to talk about real quickly, and, you know, I've been helped by this at least, so I keep bringing it up until I find something I like better. But it's hard, you know, it's hard to think about. In our community, we have all kinds of different services. So we've got pregnancy tests and ultrasounds and options consultation and, you know, material assistance program. We basically run a food bank, but with diapers and baby clothes, and then a parenting mentorship one-on-one program and a fatherhood class. And if you put, you know, how much in common does a fatherhood class have with options consultation for an unplanned pregnancy? Certainly the audiences are totally different, right? But we see maybe a unified heart in it. And so how do we think about that? Like, how do we think about that suite of services that feels pretty broad? And, you know, for me, the analogy I come back to is the difference between lifestyle medicine and emergency room, emergency medicine. And certainly both are good, right? Both are really important. I mean, every community needs an emergency room, does it not? For that time of crisis when something has gone terribly wrong, you know, that's when you need your emergency room. That's what you want at that point. But we also would never want our healthcare system to be only filled with emergency rooms. That would not be the best for anyone. And so with that in mind, I think that maps fairly well into the work that so many of our pregnancy centers do too, where when I think about it, the emergency thing, the emergency kind of medicine, the emergency service is that woman in the moment of crisis considering abortion, deciding if her child is going to live or going to die. That's an emergency, right? And that's so important for pregnancy centers to be there and to be intentional about meeting that need. And even though that's not the biggest number of clients that we see in our pregnancy center in our community, that is primary in my mind, because that's why pregnancy centers were started. That's why so many give faithfully. That's why ultrasound machines are purchased, is meeting that emergency need, being there to serve that woman in the moment of crisis. And if we were in a larger city, it may be that 98% of our effort could be spent just on meeting that emergency need. And I would say that it should be. That would be an appropriate thing, because there's no one else who's going to do it, like we've talked about. You know, pregnancy centers are designed to be the answer to that problem, to that need. And so in so many ways, that needs to be primary. We don't want to lose sight of that. But, you know, we also have this idea of lifestyle medicine. And it's a wonderful thing. And I think that, you know, in our context, we'd say, okay, we need to be meeting this emergency need. How can we train well to that? How can we invest in advertising? How can we find those women in the moment of crisis, right, that they would hear about our services and know how to make an appointment with us? How can we be on their phones? You know, those questions are so important, and we have to be there to meet that need. But as that need is met, you know, and we're able then to say, okay, what else are we doing here? Because, you know, in our community, there's less than an abortion a week. And so how are you going to be open 4 days a week then? What other services are you going to provide? And that's where, you know, everything else comes in too, that really in my mind is that lifestyle medicine, that we're working to strengthen families, to be there, to invest in relationships, to meet physical needs as they pop up, to be there invested, serving for the long-term spiritual good of our clients as well. You know, that's the lifestyle medicine portion. And in my mind, you know, they're united because they're driven out of that same heart, out of the same heart to truly love God and to love our neighbors. And so they are united. And I say, meet that emergency need. And if you are firing on all cylinders just to try to meet that because you're in a high abortion area, then I'm not going to come alongside and say, why aren't you doing a fatherhood class, right? That's not my interest here. But for rural areas, I think we have the opportunity to meet that emergency need and then say, and how can we meaningfully invest in the long-term health of our community here? And that truly is an opportunity that we have when we think about it in those terms. So, you know, that's the way I've broken it down, just for my own headspace of what am I doing here, right? How do I think about all of these different needs and all these different directions that we could go at the pregnancy center? And that's what I come back to is, okay, we're meeting this emergency need, and in raw numbers, there's just not a huge number of those needs, and that's not something to complain about. And so what opportunities are there to invest in the long-term health of our community in these areas of life, in these areas, you know, to see life-affirming decisions made for pregnancy, for parenting, for sexuality in our community? What are those doors that are open to us that we have the luxury of being able to invest in, to pursue, to prioritize because of the makeup of our community and the neighbors that God has called us to serve?
Wow, that's so good. I love that. Yeah, the way you describe that, it makes me think of like a firefighter going in to, you know, rescue people out of a burning building. And then when there's no burning, you know, people in danger inside of a burning building, they're trying to, you know, help people prevent fires, or, you know, setting up, you know, helping upgrade, you know, the infrastructure in order to prevent more fires. So there's less people that need to be rescued. That culture of life work and helping reduce the number of emergencies, is a great thing to spend that time when you're not having to rescue those who are in that most serious moment.
Yeah. And I think that's a good analogy there too, Jacob. I appreciate that, because we would say a firefighter wasn't doing his job well if he was ignoring the fires so that he could install smoke detectors. And so in the same way, you know, if we have all of our energy going into parenting education and we're missing that woman in the moment of crisis, I think we've missed something really serious there too. But you know, also with this, I want to be careful that we're serving our communities and we're not judging others that are in the same work. Certainly we can encourage to excellence in various ways, right? And be better by helping round each other's edges out where it's needed. Iron sharpens iron, as our Heartbeat Conference theme we just came from. You know, at the same time, there's a unity between these works, between these different aspects of the work, I should say, between this emergency medicine and this lifestyle medicine. You know, it's the same heart. It's the same heart for life. And every community needs all of that. And if we can't do it all, right, there's need for others to step in and meet some of those needs too. But certainly as the body of Christ, we want that work to be happening in all of our communities, and need to see that happen, right? Fires put out and smoke detectors installed.
Awesome. Well, Bryce, I really appreciate all of the thoughts that you've shared here today. Would you close out our podcast in a prayer, with the expectation that those who are listening will pray with you?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to do that. Okay, let's pray. Father God, I thank you for my brother Jacob and for the heart that you have given him, for you and for this work. Specifically, it is an encouragement and just his love for you and his desire to love and serve others are wonderful, God. We thank you for this great work you give us the chance to be a part of, to see the value of life upheld and honored in our communities. God, that is a great blessing to get to serve in this way. Would you make our work effective? I'm thinking that perhaps many who have listened would listen to a podcast like this are themselves serving in similar contexts to mine. And I pray specifically, God, for their encouragement this morning, that you would renew in our hearts a conviction that you are God and you know what you're doing. You have planted us in our communities, excuse me, and you call us to serve them with excellence, that we would show your love to our neighbors. So God, would you encourage us with that? Would you renew our hearts and our commitment to you and to the work you've given us to do? Excuse me. And would we honor you as faithful servants, God? We thank you again for this time. Trust that your spirit will bring good fruit from it. And we commit these things to you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. And one last note before we stop the recording. If anyone listening would like to have a rural concept explored on a future podcast, please send it our way, and I'll be glad to share that with Bryce, and maybe we can explore any questions or topics that we receive. So thank you.
Yeah, I would just add to that, Jacob, you know, I've been, like I'd mentioned, I've enjoyed being able to present this because I've been so encouraged by the ideas I've heard from others too. And so if you've seen something work well, you know, shoot Jacob an email, shoot me an email, Bryce@helpinghandsprc.org. And your email can just be, hey, we're a small center and this has worked really well for us and I wanted to pass it along. You know, I would love to hear that. I know Jacob would love to hear that too. And it could be as simple as that, just to share a success story to encourage us. And maybe there's things that, you know, my center needs there too. So I appreciate that, Jacob.
Yeah, I love the team effort of sharing what's working and just sharing results, sharing fruit, and so that we can learn as a bigger pro-life team, learn from each other.
Amen. Good awesome. Stuff. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
Shepherd, I shall not.